It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 93 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. This week, in honor of the release of the final issue of the Perhaponauts Danger Down Under miniseries, I'm re-airing a recent interview I had with Todd DeZago, one of the creators of the book. We talk about how the series came to be, what's involved in this miniseries, and some of the projects that he still has coming that I'm looking forward to. Then I talk with Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland, about how his store is doing, and of course, naturally, we talk a little bit about how the industry is doing as well. Then everything wraps up with news and previews. So since we've got a lot to get to, let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Todd DeZago, comics creator of such great things as the Perhaponauts and TELUS, among other good things. How are you doing today, Todd?
Very good, Wayne. Very nice to talk to you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Good to talk with you, too. Now, the thing that's most important that you're working on, I guess, is Perhaponauts. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I do. And I'd like to use the word finally. Craig Rousseau, my partner in crime and my best friend, he's the artist on the book, and we really haven't made any money on Perhaponauts over the years. So, of course, we're working on it in our spare time. Craig has two young kids, so spare time is a negative balance. But for a couple of years, we've finally been chipping away, and we've got a new five-issue series now. We've got a lot of excitement. There's a lot of things that happen with the characters, a lot of character development, because it had to kind of smash it into a smaller space than I originally intended.
Right. Now, it's funny, because I'm doing a lot of talking with people from Image these days. Image has really beefed up their schedule and things. Of course, I've read Perhaponauts for a long time, and I just loved it. Wonderful, wonderful book. Lots of fun. I think that your book is just like if you've ever had a chance to read Atomic Robo from Red 5.
Oh, yeah.
We need more fun in comic books. Funny books mean something different than a fun book. For a long time, the first sight of humor, people would drop the book and run in horror. You know, it's scarier than actual horror was. But I think the thing is we're actually getting around to now where the whole family can read the book, and this is a chance for everybody to enjoy comics.
Someone pointed out to me a little while ago, a friend of mine named Nick Carcieri, he said, the reason I like your books is because you write like it's the Silver Age.
Yeah.
And he said, I hope that's not, you don't take that as a cut.
Oh.
He said, I meant it as a compliment. And I said, well, I'm taking it as a compliment. And what he meant was, I'm writing stories that still have a little bit of fun in them and aren't so serious and gritty and dark.
Yeah.
I grew up with that. I think a lot of us did. And I think it's starting to come full circle now that people are starting to realize that, especially after the Avengers movie, maybe everybody's looking saying, hey, yeah, it would be nice to read a comic book that I could read with my kids.
Mm-hmm. How long has Perhaponauts been going on?
Craig and I did our first little ash can to kind of announce it back in 2003. And so it's been around almost 10 years now.
Wow.
We started out at Dark Horse. We were picked up by them and had a run there and felt that we weren't really being publicized at all. Part of their agreement was that they would give us some promotion, and we would go to their table at the shows and couldn't even find our book on their table.
Mm.
So we thought, maybe this is at someplace else. Meanwhile, I had lots of friends at Image who tell us, and at the time, Joe Keating came up to me and said, hey, you want me to show you how to promote a book? And so we came out of the gate. They've been incredibly supportive, very vocal in trying to get the word out and to help us out and to understand our situation. We're doing it the best we can in the time that we can. So it's not a monthly book, and it might be sporadic, but hopefully we're getting quality when we can.
Well, I think these days quality is better than quantity. If you put a monthly book out and it's not all that great, what's the point? I would rather have a good story well told and wait a while for the good things to come around. And, you know, you guys have had several miniseries so far. First of all, maybe we should talk about who the Perhaponauts are so people know what it is.
Sure. all my life I've been interested in the paranormal and wild, wacky things, and of course cryptozoology, which is Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and chupacabras. And so when Craig and I were talking about, well, what should we do, we came up with the idea of a team that consists of these weird creatures. I think the best X-Files episodes were the ones where Mulder and Scully went out looking for weird creatures. So this is a team of weird creatures that go out looking for other strangeness out in the world, and they come across it. But I equate them kind of to the classic X-Men, Byrne and Claremont's X-Men, where they're a family also, and there's a lot of family dynamic that gets in the way, and there's a lot of ups and downs along the way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love the name of the organization that they work for. It's called Bedlam. I think that's a great name for an organization.
I think one of my favorite words is just, I've threaded it into a couple different things over the years, so if people look at my stuff and think it's a little repetitive, when I did World Without Grown-Ups for DC, which launched Young Justice, Bedlam was also an entity there in that little world. But yeah, Bedlam for us stands for the Bureau, what is it? The Bureau of Extra-Dimensional Liabilities and Management. I've got to come up with some kind of acronym to make it work. So.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, in that group, and in the Parappanots, you have Big, who is Bigfoot. Probably my favorite character. But the fun thing for that is I, as a child, was always sort of scared of Bigfoot, and now he's my favorite character in the book. So I find that kind of an interesting evolution over time. What about his character? Did you go into this knowing that you wanted him to be a part of it? He's probably the best-known unusual character in the States.
Sure, sure. The idea behind that was, and you can see this in some of the other things, is I was always a huge fan of the Beast in the X-Men and the Avengers.
Oh.
He was just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of stories for him, and so that's how Big grew. These are stories that Marvel probably wouldn't give me a chance to tell or do, and I wanted to make this character into something certainly different than Hank McCoy. But there are certain traits to him. He is the strongest member of the team. He's also the smartest member of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of making him a very spiritual person, too. He's a Buddhist, so he tries to avoid the violence first, which in regular superhero books, that doesn't always play out because that's what you paid your money for.
Right, right. Well, of course, he's my favorite character. I also like Chupi, which is short for Chupacabra.
Sure. Everybody loves Chupi. He's our comic relief.
Yeah.
And again, if we want to pull from the past, Chupi is a little bit like Impulse, which I wrote for years and was a member of the Young Justice that I was putting together. When I was first putting together Young Justice, they had me write up an overview for 16 issues. So it was a big, long, protracted plot that needed to be approved by all the editors of the various different books. For Robin, the Batman offices had to, the Superman offices had to for Superboy, and the Flash offices for Impulse. And the Batman offices were a little hesitant with some of the craziness I wanted to put the boys through. And so I had to rewrite that overview three or four times. And when it was all said and done, I finally became so frustrated with the editor and some of the shenanigans that were going on in his office that I left. But I had all this stuff, and Craig had seen it, and he said, why don't we try to incorporate some of that stuff into this team, into this book? So for people who ever wondered what my Young Justice would have looked like, the Parappanots would be a good place to check out.
Okay. Now, there's also the Mothman, Carl, who I kind of like.
You're picking all the fan favorites. When the book first came out, I think Chupi was the big number one, and then Molly, our ghost, her sympathetic story. And then when Carl, the Mothman, showed up, gosh, we got letters like crazy from all these people who just loved him. So he's got an interesting backstory as well.
Very cool, very cool. And Hammerskull, of course, is in there. You've got some, quote-unquote, humans in there. Of course, we never know exactly who's completely human and who's just, you know, there's some paranormal stuff hiding around. You got Arisa and Joanne, MG, all these good people in there. Great, great fun. And you're right, it has a family feel to it. And I think that's a great idea because oftentimes teams will fight with each other, but you don't ever get the sense of affection for each other. But the Parappanots, they do like each other, and that comes across really well. I like that.
Thank you. It's one of the things we strive for.
Because oftentimes we lose that, and I just think it's important to do that in comics, especially if you're going to, like you're doing, you're appealing to the whole family. It's a good idea to exemplify what a family's going to be like, and I think that's a cool thing.
Thank you. You had mentioned earlier how Image is really starting to have some real good sales, high sales recently, and I think that's because people are starting to get tired of the big events. And the big sensational crossovers and stuff. You know, I love them too, and it's fun, but that seems to be the majority of what the big two are doing. And, you know, not knocking it, but I think people want something else. we've had a lot of people come up to our table at conventions and just walk up and say, oh, I've heard about this here. And they buy both trade paperbacks immediately. Mm-hmm. And we're shocked. Mm-hmm. And what we hear is that people are saying, oh, you can pick up this book and read it and know everything. You don't need to know, you know, you don't need to read 15 issues to get one story. You read the Perhaponauts, and you get it all right there in that package. You can sit down for the afternoon and have a wonderful adventure.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And I like the way that you do it out in complete story. You know, the five issues will be a total story. And you're right, it's set up in such a way that you don't necessarily have to buy now 20 or 30 years worth of comics to understand what's happening. And I think this is where other companies fail. And people eventually, you know, you can't read it forever, and eventually something drops off, you're done for. I mean, if you miss a year, you come back to it, and it's completely different. But with Perhaponauts, you always have a fair idea what's going on, and it's really interesting stories happening. I really like that.
I try to write that old school, that Silver Age style, where each issue, it's somebody's first issue. Mm-hmm. So, like J.K. Rowling did such a wonderful job. If you didn't read one of the first books and you jumped in on the fifth book, she made sure that when she made reference to it, she really brought you up to speed. And I think that every writer, especially in comics, needs to assume that every book is someone's first. And you've got to let them know. You've got to bring them in.
Right. And I think that's a very important thing. I agree that we're so used to the ongoing storyline and never ends that we need to have a chance to drop into a story and just enjoy the story for a change instead of waiting for the next issue and then never, ever reaching the end of a story.
Well, it does seem like that's also something that's going on in the industry these days is stories that could probably be told in two issues are now taking five and six and seven issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's for sales. It's also to give a writer an opportunity to play with the characters, but I don't see as much playing going on as I do just drawing things out to make them cost more money in the long run.
Yeah, you need more.
After all.
Yeah, you need money next month just as well as you do this month, so you got to keep them coming back month after month.
Exactly.
Now, how many trades has Perhaponauts had? I think, was it three?
Well, we originally collected the Dark Horse stuff, so there are two smaller trades that are still out there, and I think still available, called First Blood and Second Chances. But we just collected those because we really didn't have access to them. We were no longer affiliated with Dark Horse, and so we collected them at Image under the name Dark Days.
Ah.
Little pun there, a little play on words. So Dark Days takes care of the early adventures, and our second trade is called Triangle, which collects the beginning of our Image run, and we'll have this storyline, it'll be called Danger Down Under, and of course that'll be collected, but we do hope you'll get on board for the monthlies, because there's some fun. We've also got some really great artists to do covers for us, so I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, there was another book that I really enjoyed called The Halloween Spooktacular One-Shot.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, and it came out right in time for Halloween, so I really enjoyed that one, too. As we said before, you don't have to read all this stuff to understand what's going on in the new books, but they're good adventures, and they're worth picking up and reading, too. If you enjoy the single story thing and want to read a complete story, and there's some things that go on from book to book, but you can still enjoy a single story within the trade, and I think that's a cool thing.
Thanks.
So as far as going down under, now, of course, it sounds like it's going to Australia.
We are.
So can you give us the TV guide version of what the story's going to be?
Sure. Our last adventure ended up with the security at Bedlam, this strange underground facility that we don't know where it is. The security there was breached, and so in trying to get things together, they're going to beef up the security both technologically and supernaturally with spells and things. So that everyone is evacuated to the sister facility in Australia.
Ah.
And when they get there, we've lost a couple of our team members out into time or wherever, space.
Mm-hmm.
But when the remainder of our team gets there, I'm not doing a good job of making this concise, when our team gets there, they find that some of the Australian team have gone missing. They went out after a bunyip, which is an Australian creature, thing out of folklore that's supposed to be kind of like a bear with walrus tusks and webbed claws that root around in the billabongs and the marshes, and we made them. Pretty nasty creature. So that's in the first issue. Everything that happens after that just goes crazy.
Well, this is a whole new group of paranormal creatures to deal with then.
We do have some new ones. We have, as things go on in the story, some of the characters don't want to work with the new characters or are moving around. So we actually split the team And so there are several backup stories that tell the adventures of the other part of the team going.
Oh.
So it won't be the regular group together. There'll be the Australian contingent and the people from the U.S. And mm-hmm. so it's a big mix-up. Mm-hmm. But lots of secrets are revealed. I realize that if we're waiting 5 and 6 years to pay off on something I drop a hint about, it's time to really pay off. So there are some things that come to light in this series that longtime readers will feel a little
Now, when you started writing Prapanest, did you have all this stuff in mind, or was this something that as you started writing and things started, oh, I could do this or I could do that? Was this like a JMS 5-year arc, or was this sort of a, it happened, or maybe it went both ways, something you thought of as you went along?
It was a little bit of both. I did have the whole thing planned out. As I said, I had kind of cannibalized some of my Young Justice notes and story ideas and plans there. But ultimately, what's happened with it is I've stuck to my original plan, but the characters have started telling me things. That as I've been writing a story, I've had a couple instances where things that I thought were going to happen don't. And what comes out of my computer is just totally 180 the other direction, and I really wasn't aware it was happening. I just went, what? Okay, if that's what you guys want to do. So there are some instances where things get a little spooky, but overall it is the story that I was hoping for, that I originally pitched to Craig.
Well, I think what happens oftentimes is the characters take on a life of their own. And as they go along, they start to live and breathe in their own ways. And I was talking with one writer who said that he doesn't know oftentimes where it's going to end up because the characters make the story move forward that way. And I guess sometimes that happens to you. Like when I talk to Mark Waid, they'll ask him, how's this going to resolve? And he goes, well, I don't know.
Right. Well, some writers can do that. Other writers sometimes they leave it to that, and then they get to the end and they've painted themselves in a corner. I have found that in a lot of cases, I've left it to the characters or left it to chance what's going to happen, and I've been pleasantly surprised. It's really a lot of fun when that kind of thing happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, just while you were talking about that, what books do you like to read that are coming out now?
Sadly, I'm going to sound like such a dinosaur. I've been a little out of the loop, especially lately. I live very rurally. Is that the way to say rurally?
I live out in the
middle of nowhere.
In the boonies.
And, my closest comic shop is about an hour away.
Wow.
And so I don't get there that much. So I've fallen off the wagon, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
But I've been really enjoying reading a lot of essentials, a lot of back issues that I have in my collections.
Oh.
They were there at my dad's house. So I would dig in and say, what am I going to read? And I just ran through Jim Shooter and David Michelinie's Avenger run from back in the 70s, early George Perez work, and some beautiful John Byrne stuff back there. And just, again, going back to comic, when they would tell it all in a story and you can sit down and really enjoy it all at once instead of having to read 5-10 issues just to get,
get somewhere.
The hint of what's going on.
Yeah. Now, for Prapanauts, you have a postcard that you're handing out when you're going to cons this year, according to your website. Now, the website, of course, is Prapanauts.com, which is really cool. I like what it says. It says, what has danger, thrills, Bigfoot, suspense, a Mothman, chills, and a chupacabra?
We want to pique your curiosity if any of those things.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I love the art. It's very nicely done. Now, did you go to San Diego?
I don't do San Diego anymore because it's just gotten so big. It's just big, and if I had a movie to sell, I'd be there, or a TV show or something, which for Prapanauts has been on a couple different desks over the years, but it seems like it's much more Hollywood now, and maybe I have a little adult ADD, but last time I was there, I think, was 2003, and it was just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And again, I live in the middle of nowhere, so I don't have a lot of noise going on in my life, but it was just big. So I really like shows that are still about comics and focus on comics. So, of course, Heroes Con in Charlotte every year is run by Shelton Drum, who is just a saint. He is awesome and puts together this show and really, really just loves comics and loves to celebrate them and to create a place where people can enjoy it. Baltimore, that's put on by Mark Nathan, who kind of modeled it after what Shelton does. So it really has the same feel of just loving comics. So those are the ones that I go to every year. Emerald City Con up in, in Seattle. They also are really comic-centric convention that is a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Sorry if I sound snooty. I don't mean to be.
Oh, no.
That's what I enjoy, stuff about comics still.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get to choose which cons you like to go to, and that's a good thing. Because I met you at Baltimore last year. You all had a table, and I got a chance to talk with you about Perhaponauts and good things
right,
there.
Right.
Which was very cool. Now, before we leave Perhaponauts, you've caused a question in me. Is there any possibility of a cartoon, or they call them animated series these days? Is there any irons in the fire that might turn Perhaponauts into an animated series?
We have some people who have represented us in the past and tried to get in there and make things happen. Hollywood is so fickle, and we've been very close several times.
Mm.
And then that person either gets promoted or fired or something, and the next guy who comes in doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And then someone else gets hired at another company, and then they're interested. Mm. But people come and go so fast in those positions that anybody will tell you it's just difficult to get in. There has been a lot of interest in it, but ultimately nobody pulls the trigger.
Well, I hope it happens, because it would make a great animated show, because Axe Cop is coming on to FX.
Well, you asked me before about what comic books I do read, and a lot of them are independent. I've always read Robert Walking Dead, and Mark Waid's Daredevil is phenomenal, and it's what comics used to be. Fun, staying to itself, getting the story told in two or three issues, but having a through line that still keeps longtime readers on board. I'm friends with Mark, so I'm a little biased, but I love what he does with Daredevil right now. That's what comics should be. And I do read Axe Cop, so I was really excited when I saw that they were doing that. I met Malachi and blank on everybody's name here, but I met him in Detroit last year, and we were sitting next to each other, and it was kind of a quiet show. So we got to visit a lot with other people, and I wish them the best. That looks like just such a fun book, and the way he approaches it and handles it. How could it not be appealing to kids if his 6, 7, 8-year-old little brother is feeding him the ideas for the stories? Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, now you've done a variety of books over the years, and you've done Tell Us, which is kind of a fantasy book. You've done superheroes. Is there any kind of storytelling that you prefer to do?
I started out on the X-Men and X-Factor and stuff in the late 90s, and then was picked up by the Spider-Man offices. So I did Spider-Man for a long time, and I'm still called in once in a while to do a backup story or a project here or there. I'm currently working on something for the all-ages Spider-Man Unlimited series that's out now.
Cool.
So I'll have a story or two in there, and hopefully Craig will be drawing it, so that gives us a chance to work for Marvel together.
That'd be great.
And I'm working on an Avengers Earth Mighty, again, for the cartoons. I think I kind of got known as the all-ages, lighthearted stuff, but I love horror and science fiction, so part of me is sitting there kicking, saying, come on, I want to write something dark and gritty. I want to write... I've got some ideas for some Batman stories that would...
Oh.
So, yeah, Batman's probably one of my favorite characters that I haven't really had a chance to work on, and maybe someday.
Can I make a suggestion? They've got this digital comic coming out now called Legends of the Dark Knight, which are often short stories. Some of them are multiple parts, but you might consider contacting DC about that. I would think that's a good way to get in and strut your stuff and show people what you can do with the character. Just a thought.
No, it's a good thought. Sometimes the business doesn't work that way, and it depends on who's in place. I know that I was turned down for some jobs in the past because they said, oh, all he writes is funny.
Oh.
Impulse for years, and then and 2 years ago I really embraced it because Marvel asked me to do the Superhero Squad, and I just wrote silly, silly stories for kids. but I do feel that I'm a little typecast, and that can be both a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I do have hopes that I'll be able to break out of that. We'll see.
Because Batman's not quite the dark and serious character that he was for so long. So you might get the chance to do it. One of those Legends of the Dark Knights was Batman versus Amazo. And that was a really interesting little book. And I think of you for some reason. I think shorter stories are something we very rarely see. And so it would be really neat to see you do some of those kinds of things. I think that would be fun.
Well, I will definitely pursue it. And hopefully... somebody up there is listening.
yeah, I hope so. It would be fun to see. As a writer, I'm sure you see something and that prompts a story in your mind. And you don't only just do one kind of thing. It's like actors being typecast. And you've got in your brain, I'm sure, all these great stories just rumbling around waiting to come out. I'd like to be able to read those at some point.
Well, thank you very much.
Any other projects you're working on? Anything else that we should know about?
I said a little earlier that I was interested in doing more horror stories and things. I've kind of had a little renaissance of my own where I've just decided to sit down and start writing short stories. I've been spending a lot of time working on some prose, just non-comic related stories to to try to get out there, stuff for some magazines and things like that. And I have now realized after several people at Charlotte, I'm putting together a horror anthology because I do miss the old eerie and creepy and even the House of Secrets, House of Mysteries. I love those old gothic, I call it 70s gothic, because there was a time in the early 70s where they just embraced that stuff and did wonderful work. And so I'm kind of tailoring some of my short stories to comics again and talking to a bunch of artists, friends, and up-and-comers that have some of these scripts now. So I'll hopefully have an anthology of that stuff sometime. I'm working on more for Happenauts. I'm working on some small all-ages stories for Marvel. Mm-hmm. But right now, that's about it. Tell us, we do have the second volume collecting all the stuff I did after the original series. That volume is finally together, finally coming back from the printer. I guess I won't believe it till it's in my hands. It's had so many starts and stalls with this, but we had collected all the stuff that Mike and I had done before in the Telus Colossal Volume 1, and the Volume 2 should be out in stores. A lot of people ask me what the status is of future stories, and the truth is, it's a little hard for me to revisit Telus without Mike. I don't mean to get sappy.
Right. Oh, I understand.
But he and I were very close, and we did have idea that his brother and I are good friends. I'm close with his family, and we keep looking at each other saying, yes, he would want it to go on. He would want us to tell the stories that we had planned, and I do hope that sometime in the future I'll be able to both do that and to afford to be able to do it, because putting out your own comic book is costly, and you need to have some money to make some money. But I do want to revisit again. I do want to go there. They were fun characters. It was a fun story, and we did have some other tricks up our sleeve that I'd like to be able to do, if for anything else, just to honor Mike and memorialize him.
I still miss Mike Waringo's work. I really did. I enjoyed his art.
He was a good artist, and he was a good friend. I tell people, I've got his picture here next to my desk, and every morning I either say, I miss you, or I'm so mad at you for leaving. He was a great friend and also just a great collaborator. We had a synergy that would get going that was really just so much fun. It would startle us. We would laugh at each other because we would be surprised by something that came out that neither one of us had expected. So it was a lot of fun. It's nice because I look at things and think, oh, I would love to work on that. But sometimes it's knowing the editors or knowing someone. Or like I said, I think I've been typecast in a lot of ways. And I'm looked at as a fun guy. They say, oh, you wrote Superhero Squad for a year and a half. You're not really who we're looking for. So it's sad but true.
Well, you might have to put some of those horror stories in their hands so they can see that you can do that. So anyway, Todd, I wish you much success. It's so good to talk with you, and I can't wait for Happenauts to come out again. And I can't wait for that Telus book to come out, too. I have the first Colossal one, and I can't wait to have the second one. It would be a great deal. And much luck in the future, and much success.
Thank you, Wayne, and to you as well. This has been really nice talking with you, and thanks for not asking all the typical questions.
I'm trying to get away from that.
No, it's been great, but thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's good to welcome back to the podcast Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. How are you doing today, Pete?
Oh, pretty good. Things are well.
Good, good. How are things doing at your store?
Oh, they're good. Yeah, Free Comic Day was huge. It was tremendous. So it's been nice since then, too. It's not been a huge, big as busy, but it's definitely been nice.
Okay, and because we're talking roughly the first half of 2013 will have passed when this airs, and it's just kind of a big year, it seems to me, because I'm hearing that the sales are up on some of the books, like Marvel, for example, is up. DC, of course, is doing pretty steady, and then you've got other books that have been picking up, like Image, for example. Have you found these things to be true? I mean, how's Marvel doing?
Marvel's doing great. The Marvel Now stuff has gone over very well. It's some of the best books they've done in a while. People seemed really interested. It wasn't like a huge start, but it's been building steadily, and it's done very well. They've slowly become, you know, up there with the, you know, I would still say Batman and Justice League are our top sellers, but the top Marvel books, like All New X-Men and Thor, are doing very well, very close to those numbers, and a lot of the other books are doing really above average. Some of the DC books have definitely slipped a little, and you're seeing a lot of the Marvel and Image books continue to pick up readers. You know, Image is doing very well. They have a very diverse line with a lot of good stuff. I think the quality of their stuff just keeps getting better and better, and readers are definitely responding. I can't tell you how many Saga trades, the first six issues we've sold, it's just a tremendous seller for us. We sold a lot of the issues, but the trade books have just been doing tremendously well.
Hmm. Do you think that's because of the creator or the story, or how do you think that that's catching on?
You know, the creator helps both the writer and the artist up really generate buzz for the book. The book is good. People are talking about it. They're telling their friends. They say, oh, have you heard of this book, Saga? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, my friend was talking about that. I'm like, well, you should really check it out. So, you know, between me handing it to them and them getting really good buzz from their friends, it's definitely driving a lot of sales. So that's kind of like the sweet spot. You know, once your friends like something, you're definitely open to trying it. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, word of mouth, of course, is a big deal. Once you get a good word of mouth going about it, a product will pretty much take off. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear that because, you know, Image has been going for quite a long time, and they've always been kind of struggling to get attention. And I know they're making quite a big push. Of course, they've got a lot of new people coming in there, and they allow creator-owned properties to be sold. And so it's a pretty good company. I'm glad that they're picking up some.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've been making good books for a while, but they just weren't getting the attention they needed. And in the last year and a half or 2 years, they've gotten a lot more attention. And it just seems to build. Every time there's a new Image number one, people are interested in it. That's for sure. They're getting a lot more attention. I pretty much sell out of every Image number one pretty quickly. If I don't get a lot of them, I sell out in a week or 2 weeks. Or if I do get a lot, they might last a month or two. But I know I'm going to sell out of Image number ones eventually. And Jupiter's Legacy is another one. We ordered a lot of them because they had a special incentive where if you met a certain number, you could return extras. And I might have extras to return. I don't know. It's too early to say. But I've already sold 50% of what I've ordered. And I ordered a lot. So there's definitely... you know, interest out there in all their new number ones, that's for sure.
That's good, because Jupiter's Legacy, of course, they were trying really hard to make sure that people ordered plenty on that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they wanted, it was important to them to get their numbers really high on that. You know, the order rankings are increasingly important to the publishers. They feel that if they can make the top 10 or the top 20, that it really gets them a lot of attention. It really drives sales to their product. So they're constantly offering incentives or doing things to get people to really order a lot on the first two issues. They really want to drive sales early on.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you get people in on the ground floor, then it really helps. That's probably always going to be a drop-off because number ones always sell a lot. People are they want to be in and get that, and they hope it's going to be collectible. And so they're going to buy a bunch.
There's definitely a lot of that. People are buying them for eBay or the hopes that it's the next Walking Dead and somebody in TV is going to want to option in. It's going to be worth $1 million. But on Saga, you saw great numbers on number two and three and four. It's just... because if the story's good enough, they're going to come back, keep coming back to the story. You know, we saw that, a lot of that from the Sixth Gun collections and the issues that, you know, NBC was going to option it for a pilot, or did. And so people were buying it like mad to sell on eBay, and everybody, I mean, we have been selling it for years because it's a good story. And so you see this crazy thing, you know, people buy every copy they can get their hands on, and then turns out NBC passed on it. But it's still a good story, and we're still selling it because we got people to read it, and they're still coming back for it because it's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, a good story will always sell, I hope, because, you know, it's too often we experienced a time when the artist, it didn't matter what the story was, as long as the artist was a name artist, people would buy it in droves, and it's kind of switched around as people have used other artists rather than, like, the big name folks. I'm trying to remember one that jumps right to mind, but Todd McFarlane, for example.
Yeah, I mean, there's just some of the people who remember that, but it's definitely switched to... you can tell a good story, but if nobody knows about it or doesn't catch on, it's hard to sell a large number. You really need that kind of mix. It's really hard to achieve of, you know, getting attention and delivering something. We worked really hard to sell six gun issues, and it paid off for us long term. But it was a hard push, you know, sometimes, because it's different, it's a different genre. That's what I think is the strength of Image, is that they do different genres a lot. Oni has done some of that, and you know, the superhero market is kind of narrow between DC and Marvel, and a little bit of you know, Image and a few other things. But the real opportunity for the small press guys is to tell a really good story that's slightly outside of the superhero universe, science fiction, horror, westerns, you know, something different, you know, fantasy, barbarians fighting, whatever. There's a lot of open space out there for somebody to deliver a good story and have it really take off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. I've always loved my superhero books, but it's nice to see other kinds of stories in there and have them do well, because I think comics, they can't survive only with superheroes. You've got to have this other kind of thing going on.
Absolutely, yeah. It's really important, because there's plenty of people who come into the store and they're just like, yeah, I don't really dig the whole superhero thing. You know, so you have to have a lot to show them, and it really helps if you do have a lot, and it's really good. It really makes a huge impact on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get back to Marvel for a minute, because there's a couple of things I want to talk with you about. Recently, we had the revelation in Superior Spider-Man now that Peter Parker's basically gone, and he's simply Dr. Octopus in Peter Parker's body. He's going to have Spider-Man-like legs, which sort of resemble his octopus arms and things like that. How are people responding to Superior Spider-Man in your store?
It's been huge. It's been really well-written. A lot of people were really upset at first, but the writing and the interesting things they're doing with Doc Ock and the humor and the juxtaposition of, you know, him in different roles, you know, in the same situations Peter Parker would be in, but handling it completely differently, has really changed things up a lot. So, you know, it's funny for a completely different reasons. He thinks he's, you know, superior to everyone. He's always talking down to everyone. So, you know, it's quite amusing. The writing's good. People are digging it. The sales are great. It's selling way better than Amazing Spider-Man did.
That's interesting. Yep. Do you think that they'll stick with this now, or do you think that the thing that I always think is that when Amazing Spider-Man 2, the movie, comes along, they're going to want to have the books resemble what's going to be on the big screen. And so I'm always kind of figuring at that point we'll get back to Peter Parker, but I don't know. If you say the sales are doing that well, they might not do that.
Yeah, it's a long way off, and they've always done it in the past, so I would expect they'll do it again. I mean, just think, they can sell an Amazing Spider-Man number one, the return of Peter Parker and Amazing Spider-Man number one. I mean, that's going to be a huge sales opportunity for them, especially with a Spider-Man movie coming out. I don't think they're going to miss that opportunity. So, I mean, but in the meantime, Superior Spider-Man is a huge success for them.
Well, it's because you demanded it. Peter Parker is back, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, no one's going to abandon Peter Parker and Mary Jane forever. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Well, there's a lot of precedent for this. I mean, when Batman was replaced with Dick Grayson for a while, you know, we've seen this kind of stuff before, but I don't think it's been quite as big as this has been.
No, I mean, the Winter Soldier stuff with Bucky Barnes being Captain America for a while and Cap was dead, that was pretty big. That did really well. It was also very well written. It sold pretty well, but this is huge. This is much, much bigger, I think.
Now, how about Age of Ultron? How's that holding up?
It's pretty good. You know, it's been up and down. You know, people were convinced at first it was an alternate reality kind of thing, and then it kind of wasn't. But there's a lot of time travel and changing the whole timelines, which is really interesting, and I think it's been really entertaining. But sales have been good, but they haven't been blockbuster. We're not talking AVX numbers, which were, you know, in the stratosphere. These have been, you know, really good, really solid story. There's some interesting stuff going on, but it just hasn't been, you know, rocketing to the top like in previous crossovers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure as long as the crossovers do well, they'll do more of them in the future. So.
Well, yeah, they've got this whole Infinity thing coming up with the return of Thanos later this year, and I think that's going to be really big. It ties into the Avengers movie, which was huge. It ties into a lot of the stuff they're doing on Earth and in outer space, and I think it's their lead-in, I would think, to next summer. And, you know, the eventual Avengers 2 movie and a lot of the other movies and stuff, it's their gateway, I think. And also, depending how well it does, I think it will do well, but it's a really ideal thing to collect into a volume that you can sell at movie time. I think we're looking to, you know, a year, 2 years of really strong sales from Marvel.
Great. Well, another thing real quickly to touch on is that ABC's announced there's going to be an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series. And I wonder if dear old Marvel won't come together and put a new title out by that name and kind of have something that resembles it in the comics universe. Because like Walking Dead, we've always talked about, has done very well. And every time an episode airs, the more comics sell. I'm just wondering if Marvel won't use that as some way to tie into a book or other books about S.H.I.E.L.D. and then have those sell well.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly going to reprint some older Nick Fury S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. They're definitely going to bring a lot of collections out. I don't know, they haven't announced any plans for a new ongoing. I think it depends, you know, how the series does and if they can get a good writer in there to make something, you know, worth reading. I mean, it's kind of like the Arrow comic book that goes with the Arrow TV show, I think. It's pretty good, but the strength of the show is not the comic, you know, and I think, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they have some kind of tie-in, you know, TV spinoff, but I don't know, you know, if it's going to be a really big push or a really big thing for them. It's kind of depends on who they can get as a writer and what kind of story they can tell.
Mm-hmm.
One of their best things was, Secret Warriors, which was Nick Fury, the group of heroes from a few years ago. That sold pretty well, but a lot of the trade books aren't available right now. I think that could do really well for them if they bring that back out in a new format.
Okay. Well, you know, Marvel certainly got plenty to refer to and to use. Let's go to DC. You were saying that some of the DC books are slipping?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know, there's been a lot of staff writers, you know, a lot of changing in the staffing and the writers and stuff. And the storylines they seem to be lurching from one big event to another to help promote sales. And I think they're losing some people there. You know, we saw the first 12 issues for the DC relaunch really well, tremendously well. And then after issue 12, things have slowed off, come down. A few titles of, you know, Justice League and Batman have been really strong. Some of the few other titles have done pretty well too, but you're definitely seeing a lot more attrition now as we get up to around issue 20. The numbers are just, they've either leveled off at a fairly average number or they're slipping a little bit. So there definitely needs to be some changes brought in and to mix things up a little bit to, you know, ignite a spark. It would be the building into this new Trinity War between the three different Justice League groups, and that's definitely going to be their big push, and I think that could get people interested again, depending how good it is. They're putting a lot into that, and it seems like it could really, you know, do the trick, but, you know, right now, as we're waiting for that to happen, things are definitely, you know, kind of,
Yeah. Well, we're starting to see a lot of the books being canceled, like Legion recently was canceled. We had Legion lost before that, and so now it looks like there's not going to be a Legion book for a while.
Yeah, which, you know, I understand, and a lot of these books just haven't really ever hit a critical mass of readers. They've done fine, but not anything spectacular, and a lot of the books are average. You know, they put out a lot of books, and a lot of them are average, and a lot of them aren't just jumping out as being spectacular, especially with Marvel and Image doing such a good job and getting so much attention. People still have limited budgets. People don't have unlimited amounts to spend, so they're making choices.
Mm-hmm.
And their choices are, you know, what's hot and what's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see because DC, the whole point of the New 52 was to revitalize their line. And I always worried when it first happened, you know, if anything like this hits, it's always a big deal as it hits. But then a couple of years down the road, you have to keep the excitement going. And I worried when we got to this point that it might not be this way, that we would struggle to find things in the DC line that were interesting and that would sell. So I just wonder if they're going to have to make another event before too long and once again revitalize the line.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing events, you know, in each title, like Justice League and Green Lantern and Batman have definitely been, the stories have been event-driven, and, you know, so I think you run into the problem with, you know, a lot of the writers who've been doing well, they've been writing these books for 2 years now, coming up on 2 years, and they're getting a little burned out, and you need some fresh blood, some new ideas, just mix things up a little bit, and they've been having trouble retaining people, creative differences, editorial differences, and it's really important to get that figured out. You know, you really need to give these people space to really do something good. So I don't know that that's been happening, but it's pretty easy to turn this around once you get the right person in, you get the right amount of good story going, the buzz hits pretty fast, and sales pick up dramatically and usually in a pretty quick way.
Well, while Batman and Green Lantern have been strong sellers, like Superman has struggled because there have been so many changes.
Yeah, they've never, from the launch of those two titles, really known what they were doing with Superman, especially, but Action 2 to a certain degree. You know, Grant Morrison kind of did his own thing that just didn't always fit in. You know, another one is Wonder Woman. That Wonder Woman book is great. It's been doing really, really well, and a lot of people really love it. But it doesn't reflect the Wonder Woman in the Justice League as much, which is kind of an interesting position, you know. The Wonder Woman title is doing its own thing, and the Wonder Woman Justice League is a little different. So, you know, that's one of the problems they have for sure.
Yeah, well, consistency is kind of tough, especially when you've got creators and everybody wants to do their thing, and it's kind of hard. But, yeah, going forward, of course, they're going to revive Superman, Batman as Batman, Superman. They're going to be bringing more and more of these things of the bigger names out, and fewer of the lesser. I guess they hope that the mid-range, like Animal Man, for example, took off.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of hoped other books would do that, too, but it didn't. I don't think there's been any other book like that has been as big as Animal Man has been.
Yeah, Animal Man, Swamp Thing both did very well. Phantom Strangers, surprisingly, has done fairly well. It's not a huge seller, but it's been pretty consistent. You know, they've had a lot of trouble with a lot of the books they launched in the second and third wave of the New 52. Earth 2 has done very well, but, you know, Dial H for Hero and a lot of all the war books didn't do very well for them. And a lot of the books they've launched really just haven't ever found an audience. I mean, they've launched Divide and Katana, and those books aren't selling any, you know, decent numbers at all. Or just the League of America is doing pretty well, but, you know, a lot of the books just aren't. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, a year from now, I'll be curious to see where things stand. I always knew starting off it was going to be interesting. I knew Marvel would respond, and they did with Marvel Now. And how DC's going to, you know, return to that and have books that continue to draw people in, that's going to be their big challenge going forward.
Definitely. It always is. And there's always kind of a back and forth between, you know, when the New 52 launched, Marvel books really weren't that good. They were okay, but they weren't spectacular. But now they are really good, and the DC books aren't spectacular. And there'll be a switchback within a year or two. I mean, it always goes that way. They get it figured out eventually, and there's always someone who's ascending and always someone who's declining. The most interesting story is how consistently good a lot of the Image books have been. I mean, that's your real model, I think, for consistency is Image, really.
Mm-hmm. Like books like Clone, for example, I really like.
Yeah, there's just been a lot, and they keep them short, you know. Some are ongoing, but most of them are 4 or 6 issues, and if it does really well and people like it, they bring them back for another 6 issues later on. You know, Legend of Luther Strode was another one that, you know, started real slow, but really has built and built and built, and that's a pretty consistent good seller. So there's a lot of, and, you know, Dark Horse has kind of the same model, too, for a lot of things. They do a lot of 6 issues series, and then if they do well, they bring them back once a year. You know, once every 6 months, they'll bring out another 6, so, or take 6 months off and come back. So, and that's a model that's working for a lot of them. It's hard to keep, you know, a series going, you know, 1 issue a month for year after year after year. I mean, it's just a relentless grind for work. That's really hard to keep up with.
But if you had to guess, like, about a year from now, how do you think things will be?
I think pretty strong. I mean, the economy's improving. People are spending more money. There's a lot of attention to comic book movies and TV shows. I mean, they're doing really well. It's definitely, we're seeing more and more people who come in the store say, oh, you know, I've never actually been in a comic book store, and, you know, look around, things like Free Comic Book Day are great for getting people into the stores and trying things. And, you know, if they're interested in reading, they'll come back and try more stuff. And that's the way it goes. And so I'm pretty positive about the future. You know, 2 years ago, I was pretty pessimistic and worried. But, you know, things have really turned around in the last 2 years. And our sales haven't jumped up as much as, you know, we've heard nationally and online. Certain regions of the country, because we're in D.C. and there's still government sequester and a lot of that stuff that's affecting us. But, I mean, things are better. And I think, you know, 2 years from now, the economy is going to be really strong and people will be in a better mood. And there's a lot of attention, pop culture stuff, geek culture, whatever you want to call it, is getting, you know, between TV and the Big Bang Theory and Arrow TV show and these great Marvel movies they keep putting out. There's just a lot of mass media. I mean, people are calling us, businesses and other industries, like, hey, we want to jump in on Free Comic Book Day with you, and we want to partner with you on this, and PBS, and, you know, other TV stations are really interested in promoting themselves through comic stores and pop culture kind of venues and stuff like that. Doctor Who is hugely popular. Doctor Who merchandise sells really, really well. So stuff like that. It's all that stuff kind of adds up. You know, a new Star Wars series coming out in movies, you know, that's not going to hurt. So there's a lot out there and a lot coming.
Cool. Well, if people want to get to your store or contact you to buy books, how do they do that?
You know, our website is bigplanetcomics.com. We've got 4 stores around the Washington, D.C. area. We have a podcast also. So we throw out, you know, there's a lot of information. We're looking into expanding a little bit, maybe on eBay and stuff like that. So, you know, definitely reach out and let us know what you think.
Now, what's your address and phone number?
My store, the one I work at, is Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. It's 7315 Baltimore Avenue, College Park, Maryland. It's 20704. And the phone number there is 301-699-0498.
Well, I always appreciate that you guys are able to give recommendations based on what somebody likes, because I always take advantage of that. If there's something I want to learn more about, you guys can kind of tell me what's going on with that. So I always appreciate that.
Yes, it's one of the number one questions we get from people as they walk in and say, well, what's good now? What should I try? What's a new number one that I can get in on the ground floor of? I mean, it's been great lately. They're like, oh, well, we've got four of them, you know, right now that we will be recommending, and here you go. And, oh, you don't like superheroes? Well, there's this. Or you do like superheroes? Well, try this. Or science fiction, you know, try this. And it's great that there's so much good material out there, and there's so many easy ways to get people started on a series now. So it's fun.
Great. Well, good talking with you, Pete, as always, and we'll talk with you again sometime in the future. So take care.
Thanks a lot, Wayne. It's always good to talk to you, too.
And let's have a quick look at the news and previews for this week. I've got two news stories I think that are worth bringing to your attention. The first is that Mighty Avengers is going to be reworked, and they're bringing in several different characters. One of the ones that's probably best known from the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, although she was a great character back in Avengers Academy, was the White Tiger. So that'll be a Hispanic girl be a part of it. Then we've also got Power Man, the Superior Spider-Man, which is the now Dr. Octopus replaced Peter Parker, now is going to be in the Mighty Avengers. And also there's going to be Adam, the Blue Marvel, we've seen several years back, and She-Hulk. Luke Cage, of course, is in there, and all different kinds of things. So I think they're trying to make Mighty a more diverse group. So we'll see what happens with that. That book's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. Another team book, which I'm sure people will like. The other bit of news I think that's worth mentioning is that Man of Steel, the film, is actually outpacing Iron Man 3 sales on Fandango, that popular website that sells tickets to go to theaters. According to reports, Man of Steel is already outpacing The Purge and The Internship, both opening this past week, and it's reportedly outpacing all other summer 2013 releases. And that presumably includes Iron Man 3, which opened up to a $174.1 million weekend in North America early in May. And it's eventually expected to get $1.2 billion worldwide. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is what does this mean for Man of Steel? I'm hoping that this will be a great success. If it passes Iron Man 3, I'll be very happy. I'm not sure that's going to take place, but we'll find out before long, since it should be coming out this week. But Man of Steel, the commercials look great, and there's a lot of cross-promotion on many different levels, including commercials. It's hard to turn on a commercial on the television that doesn't have Man of Steel somewhere involved with it, including like Hardee's and different kinds of books and cars and things like that. So you can't miss Man of Steel, and I have to say, the commercials for it look really good. So Man of Steel, I'm having high expectations for. I'll let you know what I think of it once I see it, but that is the news for this week. Let's move into previews, and these are for the comic book releases on Wednesday, June 12. From Avatar, we've got Stitch number 14 and Feral. From Big Dog Inc., Legend of Oz, The Wicked West number 8, and Cerusus number 1 of 5. From Boom Studios, we get Bravest Warriors number 9 and Freelancers number 6, a book I really liked. And of course, the ever-excellent Grace Randolph Superbia number 8. So glad that book is continuing on. From Dark Horse, we get Black Beetle No Way Out, the 4th issue of 4. So that's the end of that miniseries. Hope it comes back shortly. The first volume of Michael Avon Oeming's The Victories is out. It's only $9.99, so it's definitely worth picking up. X number 2 of 4 is also out. From DC Comics, we get American Vampire, The Long Road to Hell, number 1, one-shot, which is $6.99. Then we move into the Bat books, Batgirl, number 21, Batman, number 21, Batman Arkham Unhinged, number 15, Batman Little Gotham, one of the kids' books, that's number 3, and it's $2.99. The Blue Lantern Ring, a promotional item, is out, and there's Constantine, number 4, Demon Knights, 21, Green Lantern Corps number 21. Also, the Green Lantern Ring is out as well. Katana number 5. Man of Steel Superman versus Zod, a scale statue 1 to 12, which is $124.95. We've also got Resurrection Man, Volume 2, trade paperback. Smallville, Season 11, Number 14, based on a digital comic. And then the book that's probably going to be the biggest of the week is going to be Superman Unchained, Number 1. As Gianluca Glaser likes to point out, there's a lot of covers. There's a Bruce Timm 75th Anniversary 1930s variant cover. Dan Jurgens has a cover. Jerry Ordway, Jim Lee, and Scott Williams. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez has a 75th Anniversary cover. And Libra Mayhill and even Neil Adams is in on the game. So I expect Superman Unchained to be big business, so watch for that. Threshold Number 6 and World's Finest Number 13 round out DC. We get to Dynamite, we get Grimm Number 2, looking forward to that tremendously, and Battlestar Galactica Number 1 with an Alex Ross Virgin variant cover. Then we move on to IDW. We have Doomsday Point 1, issue number 2 of 4. That's a John Byrne book. It's a pretty interesting book. Then we get to Image, Great Pacific number 7. I hope you're buying that book. That's a great comic. Very, very good book. And Walking Dead number 111. So a big week for Image as far as that goes. Then we move into Marvel, and we have Avengers Assemble number 16. One of the Last Avenging Spider-Mans, number 22. Captain America Volume 1, Castaway in Dimension Z. That's Rick Remender. It's an interesting story where Captain America is no longer on the Earth as we know it. Thanos Rising, number 1 of 5, is out. And Venom, who's now in Philly of all places, number 36. And Wolverine, number 4, with an Alan Davis cover. And Wolverine and the X-Men, number 31. So there's a lot of good stuff there. From Oni Press, we get Helheim, number 4, a book I happen to really like. So I hope you'll pick that up, too. Then we move into Titan Publishing. You've got the Star Wars Insider, number 142. And from Valiant, we get Harbinger Wars, number 3 of 4, is out with 4 different covers. So, should be a good thing. And that's all the stuff that's out this week. And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You hacked League systems, disobeyed protocol, and endangered your lives. And your initiative resulted in the capture of 3 escaped felons, proving Warden Strange runs Bell Rev as a cover for criminal activity. Well done.